Meeting is now being recorded.
Hi everyone, this is Aliza. We're going to get started since we only have 60 minutes on that call. I'm going to take over the helm of shepherding us through our agenda today. I hope that's okay with everyone. So because it's a short call, I just wanted to quickly go over the notes from last week. Yvette, could you project that for us? And just go over the actions that we accomplished to make sure we haven't missed anything. So I won't touch on the minutes themselves. I think we've continued our discussion of the charter on the list, and we're going to get into that. I think we're going to spend the bulk of today's call on that. I just wanted to go over a couple of the action items. So as you know, we've scheduled our first face-to-face meeting will be held in ICANN's DC office on January 14 and 15. So you all should have received some information on booking your travel from our constituency travel colleagues. I posted the list of terms, suggested terms, and included some that were suggested on the list. Thank you for that. I think that's a living document that we can continue to refer back to. But if you want to touch on that more in this call, we can certainly do that. And then just a few other housekeeping items, primarily having to do with adding some more comments to the charter, which we're going to go through, and sending out the agenda. Those were the notes from last week. We don't think there's anything missing. Is there anything anyone wants to add? Yes, I just wanted to note that I think there was some confusion last week. We said that the calls were not going to be recorded. That was inaccurate. We are recording them and publishing them on our ICANN's data protection and privacy pages. I think Diana sent the link to you where we're kind of housing all of the documents or anything that this group will share. We do want to make this group's work ultimately transparent. So I just wanted to note that for the record for this meeting. So I think we can go back to our agenda.
This is Steve Crocker.
Go ahead.
This is Steve Crocker. I've joined the audio. I'm having trouble getting into WebEx, so I'll keep working on it.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. So moving back to our agenda, I wanted to spend the bulk of this call in the Google Doc charter and hopefully finalize it. So that we have something to work from as soon as we get back from the new year. So if we could all move into the Google Doc together, I think that might be the most efficient way to go through it. And I wonder if one of my colleagues can put that link in the chat so we can all get into that document if you don't already have it open. I got it. Oh, I think Diana's putting it in. All right, I see some folks entering the room. So to go through this, I didn't see any comments on the purpose or the background. I did add in the five key assumptions that we discussed on last week's call under the background section. And I can read through those again just to get the conversation going or see if there were any further edits. I don't see everyone in the room yet. First was RDAP is the model used to access registration data. Port 43 will be deprecated. Two, a standard model will apply equally to all parties requesting access to non-public registration data. I see Jody's hand up, so I'm going to call on you now, Jody.
Hi, this is Jody. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. So my question on this one was a standard model. So we're going to have... And I know that this is what it says, but I want to make sure of this. The model that we're having is going to apply to every community that may want access to this data. We will not have a separate TEM for a specific community. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding that correctly. You know, will law enforcement have a different template? Will anyone else have a different template, IPC, BC, et cetera? I'm just curious on anyone's thoughts on that.
I'd like to offer some. This is Crocker. I think not only is that right, but the situation is actually slightly more complicated in that, depending upon the choices that individual registrants make, as to whether or not they choose to make some information public or not public, it won't be obvious to the requester what information is public versus non-public. So I think a uniformity of access is absolutely essential, as opposed to trying to have separate mechanisms for accessing the quote public versus the quote non-public information. I think the critical distinction here is, or the critical objective here, is that we're trying to build or design a system that, from an ICANN perspective, provides the legal shield and the objectives that we've long been discussed, but at the same time is also a practical and usable system. I don't see any fundamental problem with doing that. It's just that the specification that that ICANN is interested in of providing sort of a uniform, controlled, and managed access for the non-public information is not the entirety of the system design. It's only a property of one aspect, an important aspect, of course, but it's not the totality of what needs to be thought about.
This is Murray. I'm curious to sort of answer the question with a question. What would be the advantage of doing two different things for different constituents?
See, this is Jody. I'm not sure that there is. I just want to be sure that we're not planning on having, you know, 15 different templates for 15 different responses. I guess what I'm asking, will there be that? Does anyone see that happening? And second of all, the second part of this bothers me a little bit. Has anybody defined non-public data yet?
So
do we know what non-public registration data is?
I proposed a definition for us in the terms that I sent around. The definition that I suggested we use is registration data that the temp spec requires to be redacted from the publicly available RDDS. But I also wanted to call on Gavin. I saw his hand up.
Yeah, thank you. So I think there are two things I wanted to just say. First one, in response to Jody. It sounded like you were talking about different response templates, like RDAP response templates, where different third parties may have access to different data. I think that's definitely something that we should be keeping an open mind about and allowing. So there are certain entities that aren't interested in some of the data and some that are. So there'll be some people who want everything and can justify need to have access, but there'll be some entities, I'm thinking about people looking for malware or malicious registrations who may just need the email address. That's all they need to know. If you're building an RDAP server that's going to interoperate with this system, you'll need to be able to say, well, this person gets access to this extra data on top of the public data, but this person gets different data on top of the public data. The other thing I wanted to say was I think there could well be two different scenarios that we may need to support. One which is low volume requests, say perhaps a law enforcement entity is interested in a single individual domain name, and therefore wants to see all of the information about that domain name because they're investigating it in a specific case. And there'll be people who are interested in data in large volumes because they're looking at kind of, you know, they're doing population surveys. They're looking to see who's registering what and what and where and when and that sort of thing. And therefore they're likely to want data in much larger volumes. And trying to think about how those two models can be accommodated in the same protocol seems to be very difficult to me. If other people have other ideas about that, I'd be interested to hear what they say.
Francisco?
First, about what Jody said, I agree with Kevin. I think we should support that different responses to depending on the profile of the users, and that's, by the way, something that is not for us to define. That's for someone else to define. So we just should be mindful when defining our proposal to accommodate that. The second thing, I think, Gavin, you're raising a very good point. One thing is to support a query for non-public data for one domain name, and probably a very different problem if we want to allow for a request for accessing data for multiple domain names. I haven't thought of that, I must confess. I think that's something interesting we may want to keep in to consider when developing the solution. Thank you.
That might be something, Ms. Murray, that might be something that we want to handle independent of RDAP. Maybe RDAP not, I don't know if we could change RDAP to do it, but maybe RDAP as built right now is not really well geared to large bulk queries. I'd have to actually go back and read it, but there might be something else you want to develop independently to say, here's a giant list of domains that we need to fetch. Please get them and deliver them in some other way.
Thanks.
I mean, I would point out that people have been doing that with Whois for 25 years. There are people doing it, and Whois seems to be fit for that, even albeit, with the limitations that Whois has.
Sorry,
Murray. Go ahead, and then I'm going to go to Andy and John.
Andy has a question. I don't know what he has to say.
So I just wanted to, and I think Gavin touched on this, as far as the item that we're discussing, which is a standard model, my interpretation of that was that it was the operational model, meaning like a client, for all parties, a client acts and does the same thing to get the data versus what they're authorized to see. And I think that's a different, if we want to only support one set of data that's authorized versus multiple sets of data that can be authorized, then we need to say that. But I think that should be different, said differently than saying there's only one operational model that clients can use to access the data. That was my point.
Thanks. John, go ahead.
I think Andy just clarified what I was going to say. There's a difference between the model you use to get to the data and, which data you're actually getting. So thanks, Andy.
Thanks, John. And Tomofumi.
Hello. I believe what we're discussing here is like a way to support, so whether it's a single response or a bulk response or essentially like which field to respond and that stuff. I believe we're trying to implement a role-based access control ish thing through the SAFO. Meaning, depending on what profile the user has, it allows access to different fields, which the traditional quiz didn't support. Does this make sense?
Okay, thanks, Tomofumi. I wanted to, Gavin, I see your hand up, and I'll go to you, but I also want to make sure we get through some of the other comments that are in the charter. Gavin, put your hand down. Was there anything further you wanted to say?
I wanted to just respond to Tomofumi as to say he's right and that we're talking about role-based access control. The problem is that the subject of that access and the role are all subject to variation over time. And so one entity may have different level of access to the same object today and tomorrow, and they may have different levels of access today over different objects. So it's just recognizing that fact, identifies how potentially complex the whole thing could be.
Thanks, John. Thank you, Gavin. Thank you, Gavin. So, in the interest of time, excuse me, oh, I'm getting a bit of an echo. I think that may be coming from your line, Steve.
Taking care of it. I've just gotten in.
Great. Thank you. So what I'll suggest for this part of the charter, if you have any further suggested edits, to edit in, excuse me, enter them into the Google Doc in the next couple of days, perhaps by Friday, so that we can all come to agreement on the text in there. So I think there's some you know, other substantive comments further down in this document that I'd like this group to discuss on this call. So if I hear no objections, I suggest moving down to the key questions section. And the first comment we had was from Andy under authentication authorization for question number 2. He suggests using online interactive instead of, I think, instead of real-time authorization. Is that correct?
That is correct.
What's the distinction? What's the distinction?
The distinction is that real-time has a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people, and I'm not sure. I was looking for a much more, what I thought would be a more descriptive way of defining this, which is that I enter a query and I'm sitting there waiting for the response. So that would be like it's an online thing. And this kind of came out of my question for number 3, which was asynchronous as well, and I was kind of curious whether we're supporting that. Where asynchronous is someone answers a query and they just expect to be an answer later on, like they walk away from their terminal or whatever. So I was looking for a different way of differentiating between these two, and I thought real time was kind of, I'm not, you know, wed to either terms, but to me it kind of struck me as not really the term we wanted.
That's a good point. So this relates actually to the comment about bulk versus individual queries as well, and that there's seems to be a range of use cases. There will be groups of users who will expect to be able to sit down and rather quickly, you know, sort of instantaneously, if you will, find the answer to who is related to a particular domain name. And there'll be other people at, say, a different extreme who wanted to make a bulk query and don't expect an instantaneous answer, but want to be able to make the query and then have a packaged up result sent to them. And there may be other things in between. So this is before settling on the words in the charter, it's probably helpful, I think, to have some idea of what the broad set of use cases are and then see if those words in the charter comfortably cover that range of possible use cases.
Francisco, you have your hand raised.
So responding to Andy, I think your suggestion is fine, and to your question about asynchronous, yes, this is also related to the email that Gavin sent this morning, California time. And adding on what John said in response to that email, I think whether the justification would be manually or automatically better, that's not an issue for us to solve. That's a discussion for someone else to define what the justification will be and how it has to be bettered. Since we don't know what is going to happen, that is whether the vetting process can be automated or manual. We, in our solution, in our proposal, we need to support both, a case in which the authorization comes in an interactive way or online, as Andy suggested, whatever works, makes sense, I'm fine with that. And also a case in which the authorization comes later, in which the request is filed, and then the user have to wait for hours, maybe days, in order to get a response to the request. Thank you.
Thanks, Francisco. I have Jody and then Tomofumi in the queue. Go ahead, Jody.
Thanks. This is Jody again. So I'm just having a question about, I've heard bulk being mentioned several times about allowing people to be able to, you know, possibly submit 10,000 requests at once and then somehow they're getting a response back for all 10,000 at once. You know, Whois doesn't work that way unless there's a client in front of it that's doing that. I mean, basically it's a one by one. Are we suggesting that this protocol or however we're going to implement this is going to allow for that, allowing for users to submit 10,000 requests at once and then respond with a packaged up zip file that has all that information in there? I think I'm missing something. That's why I'm asking.
Let me go to Tomofumi next.
It's more of a question, but now I'm thinking the data side, would, let's say, in one registry, would which information is going to be private or not? Is that going to be it's not going to be the same, right? Each domain has, but what I'm trying to say is, like, does each domain have unique profile in terms of which information is hidden or not? That's going to make things really complicated.
Sorry, I think Francisco wanted to try to answer that question.
Just quickly on that, Tomofumi, on the Italy space, there is a policy, the temp spec, which we are expecting to be eventually replaced by a consensus policy. Currently, the EPDP working group is working on that. And the point there is that there is, should be a uniform way of what should be made public and whatnot, exactly. It could vary depending on specific requirements that are considered in the policy. For example, there is an option for, in certain cases, registries may not do the redaction because the GDPR does not apply to them or a similar legal requirement, or because the registrant opted to have their contact data published, but the rules around what gets published and what is not, those are common among the GTLDs. Thank you.
Okay, so the reason why I'm concerned is depending on how we model or design the mechanism, if the non-public and public is a very clean cut, it's probably easier. But if each domain is slightly different, there needs to be a way on the data side to signal that for this particular domain, this particular field is private. And thus, you have to go through the other mechanism.
So basically, I think I talk about this in the mail list. It can be as simple as this. If the user is making the query to the registry and only gets certain fields and they were expecting to get access to other fields, that's it. That's the signal that the fields are not publicly available. And I was suggesting one potential mechanism, and I recognize this is more in the solution space than the charter, so it doesn't have to be like that. But at least one potential way is to have a remarks or notice letting the user know that they can get the full set of data following certain procedure, and there will be information for them to follow that procedure. Thank you.
And I have John, Andy, and Scott in the queue. So, John, please go ahead.
So, allowing for bulk access, I mean, the way people do it today is just by writing programs and doing multiple queries to Whois, and as Gavin said, that seems to work. There's maybe a question back to the policy world at some point, and I think, you know, we're not going to know the answer to these as to whether or not an API is going to be expected for this. You know, when I think of the scenarios for doing bulk queries, for example, from law enforcement, it's normally related, when it's large scale, it's normally related to botnets and criminal infrastructure. So there are scenarios where they may want to get data about tens, if not hundreds of thousands of names. So there's definitely a use case there.
Thanks, John. Andy?
Yeah, I wanted to address what John just said and also address Jody's comment. The current RDAP specification is very much like WHOIS in that it's request response. And I'm hoping that we're going to try to stay within the RDAP ecosystem and not do new protocol work specifically. Today the way it works, and this is what John said, today the way it works is people have a lot of requests. They just write programs to do that and let it go. They do that with WHOIS and they do that with RDAP today. In fact, you can go on to GitHub and find several projects that are RDAP related where people do that. I myself have written several of these, or one or two of these programs. So it's for anyone who wants to do bulk queries, they can just write a client to do that and get it done. The other comment I want to make is, as far as RDAP is concerned, I would like for us to keep in mind that RDAP is a system that's already in use, especially in the numbers community, and I would hope that we would keep that in mind and that we don't create any type of operational model that causes a schism with how RDAP is currently used today. And as an example, one of the things we're doing here at Aaron is we're going to have a new RDAP web-based client hopefully in a couple of months. And as we were designing this, our main audience is the numbers community, but we designed it in such a way that it should also work with domain names as well. So as we go forward, I would like for us to keep that in mind. Thanks.
Thanks, Andy. I have a number of people in the queue, and we still have quite a few comments in the charter. So I think after if Tomofumi is the last one with his hand raised, after that we should move on to some of the other comments. So Scott, please.
Sure. So Scott Hollenbeck here. Again, building on what Andy said, let me just say it a slightly different way. We had come up with a set of assumptions here before, and I think I'd like to propose adding something to that. So if we are assuming that RDAP, as specified, is, a given, an input given here, the assumption should be that we are limited to what is in RDAP. And if we come up with something that is not something that RDAP currently does, such as bulk queries, that would be considered out of scope for the function of this group. And that would, that would help us very quickly understand, what things we need to focus on and which things get punted to somebody else. And so just as an example, bulk queries, not part of RDAP, gets punted. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. I'm going to try to, if you want to try to draft something in the Google Doc, or I can try to work on some language, we can add that as well. Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. Just to add on this bulk thing, there are, I can think of at least three different kinds of bulk queries that I know are of interest to different segments of the community. And not to counter what's just been said about staying within RDAP, I think that it's important to say what our posture is with respect to these three and any other bulk kinds of queries, just so that we're clear to the audience that we're speaking to how we expect these things to be covered or not covered. The three that I have in mind are this. Susan Kamaguchi comes quickly to mind. She talks about trying to find the full set of domains that are registered to a particular registrant. So there's a kind of cross-cut through the entire corpus of registrations to find related registrations for the same person. That's one. Another one is the history of over time of all of the registrations related to a particular domain name. This is currently done through external third party WHOIS, and it's a very irregular and controversial and contentious process, and something we may want to decide whether we want to regularize, or if we just continue to say that's out of scope, then there will be a continuing problem in that area. And the third that comes to mind is the research people who want a lot of information but can take it as an anonymized data. And so that raises the question, how can that be supported? And as I said, if we're going to rule these out as out of scope for the RDAP-related things, then I think it's important that we make some statement about where those things are going to be treated and how they fit in the overall scheme. Thank you.
This is Francisco. Steve, thank you. I think I like what Scott and Andy suggested, that in order to make our work possible to finish on the timeline we're being given, we consider only using features that are already available in RDAP. So I will propose that these items that you're suggesting are not within the scope of what we are working on, and we should only focus on enabling access to non-public data using the functionality that already is available in RDAP. So that's the lookup functionality. Thank you.
Thanks, Francisco. I don't see anyone else in the queue at this moment, and I think we should move down and try to discuss a couple more of these comments, and then what I'm going to suggest is if we cannot sort of come to agreement on the language on this call, perhaps by Friday we can use the Google Doc to share any further edits or comments, and we could try to schedule a call for shortly after the new year to hopefully finalize it at that time. We do have a call scheduled for January 8th, I believe, but we were hoping to have something ready ahead of that time, because that's when Joran and some of our executives will be in Brussels that week, and we'd like to send him armed with a charter that he can start discussing and point to where some of this work is going. Of course, we can always give him a draft, but I think it would be nice to be able to finalize this and actually get a little bit deeper into our work starting in January. So can I suggest that we move down to the to Andy's comment in the data transport, storage, and audit section? And Andy, I don't know if you want to speak to this to get the discussion going.
Yes, hold on. I'm trying to figure out where I made that comment.
Item number two.
Yeah, sorry. So this is about the audit trail, and I was unclear about what was meant when we were talking about logging the identity of the what it says, how could a query that is required not to be logged be securely identified as such? And the question I asked was, is the requirement that the query does not show up in any audit trail, or is the requirement that the query is logged but obfuscated, meaning you can tell someone made the query, but you can't tell what either what the query was or who they were or whatever. And so I was just unclear about what that requirement was.
Okay. Andy, this is Francisco. So this is, to be clear, this is not, something that, sorry, where these queries will be allowed or not in policy, that's not for us to decide. The question here is, since there is a possibility that this feature will be required, since particularly law enforcement have been talking about having a feature that will allow them to not show to the basically to anyone that they are asking for certain information about a certain domain name, then we are suggesting that the solution we propose allows for certain queries to be flagged as do not log, so that there will be no log of who requested the query, what the query was, and so on and so forth. That's the idea. So not about obfuscating the login, but to not do the login of specific queries that are flagged as such.
That makes sense. But my next question, now that you've said that, my next question is, what do you mean by securely? Is it just that when the flag is set, that is covered, that the flag cannot be tampered with in transit, or is it that when they actually make the query and the flag is set, there's some way of verifying that it did not get audited?
Yeah, I think I didn't have a specific suggestion when I wrote this this question. I think after thinking some more on this, I think probably the word securely does not go there. I don't think there is much other than the party that is making the request is asking for there to not be a login of that, the fact that they are making the query. And it will be something on the authorizing body that will allow the authorizing body to know whether that's something that should be honored or not. That's potentially another way to put it. So in other words, I don't have a very good suggestion on this.
All right. No, I think you answered my question.
Okay. Steve, you have your hand raised?
I do, thank you. I think this business of logging or not logging queries is a slightly different way to look at it. The issue is that if you log a query and it has got some sensitivity to it, then the question is who gets to see that? So probably a better approach is to say, you want to build a system in which, in principle, you can log all of the queries, but you may want to segregate or somehow protect some of that log from some of the users. So in some ways, the log information is like any other information in the system. It's got degrees of sensitivity and access controls on who can see it. And what's really needed here to satisfy the implied requirement from law enforcement or intelligence people is that there needs to be a way to curtain off that information. But to make that, to fail to log the information puts you in grave danger that you can't debug the system and you can't debug, can't detect various abuses of it. As I say, the proper approach is that you want to curtain those off and treat those as sensitive information, just as we treat other information as sensitive.
Thanks, Steve. Tomofumi.
I think Steve said it all. It's exactly what I wanted to say.
Great, thanks. Andy?
Yeah, I appreciate what Steve said there. That was very useful. And it prompted me to think about this a little bit more. It may matter as to who is doing the logging. So, for instance, if every query is going through ICANN, if they log that the query was made, but we don't want the authoritative server to log that, and that may be a different story. So maybe if this needs to be in there for debugging purposes or for trying to figure out when something went wrong, it may be important to understand which party is logging and which party is not. Thanks.
Thank you. So I deleted the one word, the securely, that Francisco suggested. I think otherwise we may be okay with this question as is, from what I understand. If there's any further edits, like I said, I suggest you put them into the document. I was just moving on to the access control protocol because we had a number of comments on this section. So some of them came from Scott. Scott, I realize you don't have access to the document, but I pulled them from your email to the group regarding a number of issues. I'm not quite sure how to summarize these. if you have the document in front of you, perhaps Scott, you can walk us through what some of your points were on this section, if you recall.
Well, sure. And I don't know that I call them points at this point, mostly because I'm still, you know, hoping to get some discussion going around what I've heard so far. I mean, I think we clarified that, again, an underlying assumption is that ICANN will operate a centralized access portal of some type. One of the questions I had, though, was, if based on some of the comments, it appears that the model being proposed is one in which a client will be required to perform two queries to get a full data set because the client will never know what is considered public data and what's considered non-public data. One of the comments I sent to the list was this just doesn't seem to be a very efficient model, for clients or for, those of us who will be operating the authoritative servers. I think it would make more sense if ICANN were going to operate a centralized access portal, that they were simply the portal for all queries. And, when they get a query, they vector it off to the appropriate sources, collect the full data. And, given that we're talking about this, portal having some type of authentication and authorization function, that, the responsibility for determining what gets sent back to the client would rest with the operator of this centralized portal. That would allow the server operators, to only have to worry about responding to queries, from ICANN, and it would allow clients to only have to worry about sending queries to one place. It just seems like a much more efficient way of doing this.
Francisco.
Yeah, so, Scott, to be clear, I think only the first time, that's when the client may need to issue two queries, right? The first one to discover that the information from the register or the register where it tells them to go follow certain procedure in order to get the non-public data. But later on, nothing stops the client from issuing the queries directly to ICANN. So one could argue that given that in order to get access, you need to be accredited and potentially provide a good number of information in order to just be registered for potential access. As part of that process, the user will already know what's the place where they need to go to get the data, and they don't need to issue not even the first query to the registrar. So I would not agree that the clients need to do two queries in order every time in order to get access to non-public data. And regarding the issue you raised in the mailing list and this comment, I think that what I would say is we're not being asked to deal with with public data. And I interpret that as meaning leave it alone, leave it the way it works now. There is no need to complicate things and make this be create a huge target point for whoever is doing being the proxy for every single query. If you look at the number of queries that are being received currently, who is in the utility space, since all that information is public, we're looking at a very large number of queries. Unfortunately, there is no good information about which of those will be queries that in which non-public data is being requested. The only data point that I have, it was provided by, I think, Nominate in the Barcelona meeting, where they said that in the course of 3 months, they got 800 requests, and we're talking a multi-million domain name registry. I don't intend to portray this as a good statistic measure, but it's a good data point because Nominate has been redacting data for quite a long time, and they still don't get a lot of requests for non-public data, and that's how they portray it. And similarly, the GeoTLDs in that meeting, they, of course, have only been doing this since May, so it's less span of time in which they have done this. But they also not seen a lot of queries for non-public data. So potentially we're looking at a solution for non-public data in which the number of queries is minimal compared to the queries for the public, for public data. So that may be another reason why we don't want to mess with the public data queries. Thank you.
Thanks. Excuse me. Thanks, Francisco. We have a bit of a queue going here, so I'll start. Steve is next.
If I may, though, Diana, just Francisco, you talk about queries for public data and non-public queries. There is no such concept in RDAP, right? There is a query, and you get a response. So this is part of my confusion here. Could you tell me what you mean then, please?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Okay, a moment ago, you said that people were submitting queries for public data and queries for non-public data. Did I capture that correctly?
Sort of. The point I'm trying to make is that if you're referring to the example with nominate, is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm referring to a comment that I thought I heard you make just a moment ago.
Well, the example I was given is nominate. They refer to 800 queries in 3 months for non-public data. So I'm guessing that's what you're referring to.
Okay, perhaps. But my point is, as I said, in RDAP, there is no such concept of queries for public data or queries for non-public data. There is just a query for a domain. So how are we drawing this distinction? That's what I'm asking you to explain, please.
Oh, sure. So a party that is except the first time they may not know that, but they need to go through a process for accreditation where they will need to provide certain information that is, again, not for us to define, but it will seem from the other discussions that it's going to be some requirements for people in order to just register, in order to potentially get access to the data. And through that process, they could be told or what is the place where they go and request access to data, so they will never query the registers or registrars for the data, so they don't have to do the two queries. But in the worst-case scenario, they send one query, they get the response, they see that they don't have the fields they were expecting, and they are told where they need to go in order to get the rest of the fields they are interested on. So they that's all they will know. So perhaps my terminology is not good, but I hope the concept is being transmitted that you don't get the information from going through the to the registries and the registrars, but you get the pointer to where you go and get the rest of the data, and that's where you query. And from then on, that's the place where you go directly. There is no need to go to the registries and registrars again to do the double query. Does that make sense?
I understand it. I don't want to comment on whether or not it makes sense, but if I understand you correctly, then again, we are making an assumption that one of our input givens is that we are going to perpetuate the current model that's been implemented to accommodate the temp spec. Is that true?
I'm sorry, what model are you referring to? Do you mean that there this would be a reduction of data?
Yes, that there is data being redacted, and that
yes.
And that there is a requirement that clients are going to have to be submitting split queries for what is described as public data and what is described as non-public data.
So yes, you're right on the first thing that we are assuming that the EPDP is going to continue having requirements for reduction. There is an assumption there. Yes. The other part is just an idea how things could work. It doesn't have to be like that. It's just an idea.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
So, Steve, if you'll indulge us for a moment, I think John had a point he wanted to make on this, so I'm going to skip over you quickly to John and then back to Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah, so two points here. One is we're designing over the phone here, which I mean, design process requires that you look at the various options and you document the ones you disregard. I don't think personally that the question of how the query flows is an answered question at this moment. I think there are pros and cons to both, and I think it would behoove as a group to sit down and think all of those through, probably whiteboard them and then document some of that. At the moment, we're focusing on the charter, and I do want to remind folks that if it needs tweaking after we publish, you know, as long as it's not major stuff, I think tweaking will be fine as well. So we don't have to get that perfect to be the enemy of good here.
Thanks, John. Steve, please go ahead.
Thank you. So I appreciate John's comment that we're putatively talking about the charter and not trying to do the full design. And then on the other hand, I think we are laying down some markers here which could turn out to be problematic, so that I think it's helpful to stake out the territory. I'm have to admit that I'm a bit confused after listening to the interplay between Francisco and Scott. Here's what's on my mind. It won't be clear in general to the party making the query what information is public and what information is not public. It could vary and likely will vary on each individual domain depending upon whether or not the registrant chooses to make certain information public or not public. That's one problem. Another is that there will be degrees of publicness, or degrees of access, rather. The information that is available to one group may be less than the information that's available to another group. So, for example, if somebody is accredited for law enforcement, they may be able to get more information for a query about a domain name than somebody who is accredited in some other group, say intellectual property or whatever. These are policy decisions, but I think that the design of the system has to accommodate that potential. And to simply say there's only two classes of information, public and non-public, is going to lead us into trouble. I can give some more examples if we want, but maybe that's sufficient. Another complication is, how does anyone even know whether or not a query is going into the G space versus the CC space? Do you have to look up first whether or not the top-level domain is covered by ICANN contract or is covered under individual rules for a particular country code, and then make different kinds of queries depending upon that, as opposed to an internet standard for how you make queries in this area? Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. John, your hand is still up. I'm not sure if you had any further points. If not, we can go to Gavin. Gavin, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So I appreciate that this is kind of chasing down a rabbit hole, and I take on board previous points about focusing on the charter. The issue I have with what Francisco said before was, it sounded as though the authorization process was like a one-time thing, or maybe something you might have to go back and refresh every now and then, someone has to kind of just, you know, authenticate themselves, get authorized to get access, and then from that point on, they have access to anything that they might want. And I would challenge that and say that there could be a scenario, there easily be a policy scenario where each individual request has to be separately authorized, because if you look at GDPR, you have to explicitly state the purposes for what data you want to process. And so it may be that we don't end up in a situation where certain person X gets authorized to access every record forever, but it may be that they get access to one record for one time or for 24 hours or whatever, and then the next time they want access, they have to go through the separate process of getting authorized. It's very hard to see how a machine-to-machine protocol like RDAP could support that model, where everything's done in band.
Thanks, Gavin. Tomofumi.
From listening to the conversation we just had, I believe there's got to be some heavy lifting on the RDAP client side, and there's some expectations on how it actually behaves or processes things. For instance, perhaps having a set of profiles for each TLDs, or maybe looking it up or something like that. Well, otherwise, I see it very hard to accomplish.
Thanks, Tomofumi. So I'm just noting we have 5 minutes left, and I just want to tie up some loose ends here before we close the call. So what I'm going to suggest, given the comments, and I see a lot of chat going on here, most of you probably know ICANN shuts down for the holidays. Friday is our last day in the office. And I just had a quick side chat with Rom. He'd really like to get this finalized and done by Friday. We can continue to tweak the charter or as need be and revisit it. but would like to have something ready to go so that we can begin our work when we're all back in January. So what I'm going to suggest is if possible to have any comments and edits made to the Google Doc or in a Word document format sent to us by Thursday at noon Pacific. We'll send out an email following up on this if you all agree, so that we can finalize it and hopefully maybe even publish something on our web page. I also wanted to, before I go to the comments really quick, remind everyone to respond to the travel request forms that were sent by our constituency travel team so that we can begin to make the arrangements for next month's face-to-face in D.C. So quickly, I have Tomofumi, Jody, and then Scott. Tomofumi? Or was that an old hand? Okay, Jody, go ahead, please.
Just a quick comment on the assumptions and the access control protocol. I guess what I'm assuming is that if ICANN are centralized, WHOIS lookup, if ICANN decides not to take on that role, does most of this working group fall apart, basically? It's just an open question, I guess. I mean, we have ICANN in all of this for the clarifying questions, I guess. What if ICANN decides not to be take on the liability of WHOIS? Does this working group become ineffective? Does everything that we have come out of here? And do we need to say that instead of ICANN, it's some centralized body? I'm just going to leave that out there for discussion. Thanks.
Thanks, Jody. Scott.
So again, a direct question. Is one of the assumptions we are working with that the current temp spec, which was written and has been implemented using WHOIS today, right, because that's what we're, you know, currently stuck with, and it's written in such a way that it's dealing with all of the limitations of WHOIS, are we bound going forward in the future to, you know, to continue the practices that are being implemented today to accommodate the temp spec? So, yes or no?
So, Scott, there is an assumption that the idea of reduction is going to continue to be there. That's the assumption that is there. I don't know if you're talking about something else besides reduction.
Well, no, one of the reasons I'm asking, Francisco, is, as I said, you know, there are certain ways that the specification is being implemented because WHOIS has, you know, very specific limitations. We may not be bound to those same limitations as we transition to RDAP. And so I want to understand if we can take full advantage of the features of RDAP or if we are going to have to continue practices, you know, because they've been implemented today, you know, because of the limitations of WHOIS. The answer to that question will have a very significant impact on, you know, choices and decisions that we have to make going forward.
So I don't know which practices you're talking about, so I don't know.
Okay.
The only one that I know for sure we are assuming is going to continue is the redaction requirements for redacting data so that there will be public and non-public data.
Okay, so one of the assumptions is that even with RDAP, we are going to be in a model of redacting non-public data, right, and you still see that this need for some form of split query capability on behalf of clients, right?
Yes. Redaction is an assumption we're making.
I think all this needs to be reworked. The word redaction probably needs to be removed from our vocabulary. It's a question of what information that is collected is available and to whom under what circumstances. So rather than talk about it, removing information, it's a question of selecting information that's been collected and which selections, which subset of the collected data is available to which parties and under what circumstances. And that moves it into a more neutral and easier to discuss policy arena.
Thanks, Steve. We're out of time, so what we'll do is send out a follow-up email today with notes and action items, including the timing for when we'd like your input, so that we can hopefully finalize this this week. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.